Let me give you some, besides spiritual ones, of loving the Lord your God first, of trusting in the Lord, not on your own senses, your own feelings, but 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, do not be unequally yoked. And the principle here is, you don't yoke yourself. A yoke is where you get in a harness with something that's not equal with you. I brought a picture that's a good article. See, this has a black cow and a white cow on it. A better picture of unequally yoked is when you put a horse with a cow. A horse pulls fast in quick motions and a cow pulls slow and steady. And when they're in the harness, one's going fast, it jerks the yoke around. And the yokes go like this, you know what they do? Pretty soon they rub sores on each other because they're not pulling together. They're not nice and steady pulling. And he says, don't be unequally yoked, which means you don't connect a believer with an unbeliever. Because all your purposes are different. All your goals in life are different. If your goal in life is to serve God and follow Him and to glorify Him, then you make choices to follow God. And if you marry a woman who that's not her choices, she's going to have a whole different set of goals. What do you do with your money if you want to serve God? Well, if you honor Him, you say, He's more important than money. And if He gives you a desire or a desire to give to somebody or to give money, you say, you know, that God says, I want to use this as a test to see where your heart's at. Well, you're going to give regularly. You're going to give to needs. But if she doesn't have any desire to give to some need, but she says, you know, I really want a nice house. I want that money to go to a house. I don't want it to be just given to somebody out here. She says, I want to have nicer clothes. I want to drive a nicer car than to give money out there. Is that going to bring any contention? If she doesn't want to serve God, what does she want to do on Sunday? What do you want to do? You know, she doesn't want to spend time to go to church. I mean, why do that? That's a waste of time. Let's go do what we want to go do. Okay, and then you raise kids, and the kids, if she says, I don't care about teaching them about God, and you want to teach them about God, there's no way they're going to learn about God if they say, Mom doesn't care. It's even worse if Mom cares and Dad doesn't, because they'll follow Dad even more, because he's the leader. There, if the goals aren't the same, if you have a triangle and you have God and man and a woman, and the man's growing towards God and the woman's growing away from God, the distance always gets greater. Pretty soon it just tears apart. See, that's why both of them have to be of God. If you're both growing towards God, the distance is always getting closer. You'll have the same goals. You'll be able to sit down and say, well, what's God want? And He gives you a principle in Scripture, and you both say, that's what God says. And that's what we do, and the both of you are going together. Otherwise, one's going this way and one's going this way, and there's always contention. He says, don't be unequally yoked. That's the principle. Okay, let's look at a couple others that are important. If you have a Bible, turn to 1 Corinthians 6. 1 Corinthians 6, I'm going to start in verse 18. This section talks about sexual immorality. It's very strong. Verse 18, actually I'm going to start a little bit earlier. I'll start in 14. It says, by His power God raised the Lord from the dead, and He will raise us also. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ Himself? Shall I then take the members of Christ and unite them with a prostitute? He says, never. Do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? In other words, he says, if you connect yourself physically with a woman, there is a connection that's beyond our just physical realm. You may connect yourself for a moment. You know, we have a one-night stand, then you go your separate ways. And God says, it goes deeper than that. And you may physically be apart, but He says, you're connected as one. That's what the meaning is. It, you cleave. He says there's a spiritual connection that goes with this. And he says a prostitute in this case is anyone that's not your spouse would be, or they went to prostitutes constantly. He says if you have sex with a prostitute, you're connecting yourself like with them. You're uniting yourself with them. He says, for it is said the two will become one flesh, but he who unites himself with the Lord is one with the Spirit. And he brings that in because he said, if you become a Christian, you've united yourself with God. You have the Spirit of God inside you. He says, now do you take that Spirit of God and you go connect it to a prostitute? He says, when you go and have sex outside of marriage, you are uniting the Spirit of God in you with this prostitute. He says, never, don't do it. He says, in 18, he says, flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a man commits are outside his body, but he who sins sexually sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. He says, when you're doing this, you're taking God, and you're taking God and you're associating it with the prostitute. He says, you were bought with a price. Christ's dead on the cross. Therefore, honor God in your body. Okay, he gives a specific command here. Don't get sexually involved in any way. Period. It's not a question that, well, I'm okay. It's like saying, well, we're going to get married so we can have sex. God says, no, that's wrong. You're connecting yourself, his spirit, with a prostitute. You're not married. You're to flee from it. Okay, it does a lot of things. There's all kinds of things from, besides all the sexual diseases you can get, it breaks away the trust that you build. You're trying to build a foundation. If your wife would know that you're faithful before marriage, she'll have all this trust in that you have the self-control to be faithful after you're married. You build a foundation on it. When she knows that you've had sex with a lot of different women, that brings up all kinds of questions. And I will guarantee you that the woman you marry, she will want to know every other girl you ever slept with, without question. And you will not be able to get close to her unless you tell her those things. There'll always be this wall between you and her where there's things that aren't told. And if you've already slept with somebody, that's something you'll have to face. But if you're with a godly woman, she has the ability to forgive you in God. But I will tell you, there, that is true. You can read all the studies you want, and they will say there, it only by the grace of God, I think in time, can you forget those other experiences. That when you sleep with one person and you sleep with another, you have flashbacks between the two. And it takes God's grace over time to forgive that and remove it. If that's a problem that you had, you need to be praying that. Ask God to cleanse your mind. He will forgive you. And you commit yourself to being a virgin from this point on until God, till you do, God does bring someone to marry. But the studies show that people who have sexual encounters before marriage, they have a much higher divorce rate. Much more instability it brings, because it brings all kinds of different factors in that, you know, we may not understand them, but the statistics show it always occurs. And only by God's grace and following God do you beat that. And it's a submission to God where both people love the Lord. So one principle, you don't get involved in any way. And I tell a parable that I think is important. It's a guy named John, and John takes out Susie, and Susie's wonderful, but she comes to where she's got a special occasion. She's going to have a birthday, and he wants to find her a present. So he searches, and he goes to the stores and finds her, and he comes around to this jewelry store, and he sees a golden locket. He says, well, I'm going to get her a golden locket. So he gets the golden locket, and he goes and he gives it to her on this special occasion. And pretty soon, she gets upset with him, and Susie leaves him, and he's in distress for a day, and then he meets Linda. And Linda's wonderful. So pretty soon he and Linda are great. Well, after time, Linda has this special occasion, so he goes to find her a present. So he searches around, he comes, sees a jewelry store, and he says, well, I'll get her a golden locket. So he gets her a golden locket and gives it to her, and it's wonderful. And a week later, she's mad at him, and Linda's gone, and he's in distress. And then he meets Elaine, you know, and he goes through 10 more girls like this till finally he meets Kathy. And all of a sudden, this girl's different. Something is different in what he thinks about her. And he spends time with her till he says, you know, this is the woman I want to be the mother of my children. This is the woman I want to spend the rest of my life with. This is the woman I'm going to work hard to provide for. This is the one I will give my life for. And he asks her to marry him, and she says, yeah. And he goes through, and he's going to get married, and she says, well, let's exchange wedding gifts on our wedding night. And okay, great. So he goes around searching something for her, and they're going to get married. Well, he says, I'll get her a golden locket. So he gets married, and on their wedding night, after they've gone to the ceremony, they go to the motel, and she gives him a special thing he thinks is wonderful, you know, and then he gets out and he gives her a golden locket. And as she's looking at it, she's saying, "Oh, how wonderful." And he's going, "How terrible. Do you realize I've given a golden lock to all these other women? I have these golden lockets, and here's the woman I want to live with, the mother of my children I'm going to give myself to, and I'm giving her the same thing I gave all those other girls. How cheap of me." What's the parable about? It's premarital sex. What's he getting? He's given the only thing that God says, save for your wife, and he's been giving it to all these other women. And now when it comes to the woman he really does love, the one he does want to give for, he doesn't have it to give her. He's given it to everybody else, and now it's cheap. It's of no value. That's what happens with premarital sex. You devalue it, and then it doesn't have any significance. Okay, let me go on to a couple others that are good. If you continue on here, he's told him, he says, don't get involved in any immorality. Then he moves right into chapter 7, and it doesn't change. This is the same thing he's talking about. And he says, now, for the matters you wrote about, it is good for man not to touch a woman, but since there is no so much immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. Okay, what's he saying here? He says, for matters I've written about this here, he says, it's good for man not to touch a woman, but to marry. Well, what's it mean when he says to touch a woman? In the Greek, the word here is to excite. You touch her and it has an effect. Now, this isn't just, you know, I touched him physically or touched her physically. It's emotionally, spiritually, physically. Well, he's saying you're not supposed to get the woman excited. The man is to be the leader. He is to set the stage, and the woman is a responder. He goes and he's the one who interacts. This women's lib thing now that says the women can go ask the men out and they're to be aggressive. That's not the way God designed it. They have to go against the grain to do that. And it goes against the grain of the men, too. It's not a natural thing. It says the woman is a responder. He says if you go out and you have some woman that you're interested in, if you start doing something with her, you will excite her. In other words, she gets excited to where she will respond. If you're going through and you're looking at gals that you think qualify to be someone you might marry, then you ought to pray about it for a long time before you ever interact with them. Because if you start giving them attention, if she is a responder and she likes you, she's going to respond to it by nature. But what if she's not the right one? But you get her excited because you give her attention. She says, I like attention. Maybe she likes you. But you say, well, this is a nice person, but I'm not sure this is the one I want to marry. But he says, it is not good for a man to touch a woman. Because see, women, they respond differently. If you give them attention, you might be just saying, you know, I like the attention of this girl. I like for others to see I have a girl hanging around me. You know, that makes me feel like a stud. It makes me feel good because my ego needs it. But if you give her attention, she responds. You know what she's thinking about? Painting the house, putting on the curtains. I mean, she's going to go 10 times farther. You're still back there just saying, well, I like my ego to be fulfilled having a girl around. And he says, that's irresponsible. It's sin. You are not to touch a woman. You're not to excite her in any way unless you're serious about it. That's why this idea to just say, well, I'd like to have a date because I want to spend some time with a girl. No, that's wrong. Not only is it set you up to get involved in immorality, which is wrong, but it sets you up to lead your sister astray. Now, I don't know about you guys, but have you ever, I can remember getting really excited to go ask a girl out and getting dumped, getting said no to, and painful. You know, you just feel terrible. By the time you get up enough guts to go do it, somebody who you really like, and they say no to you, you feel terrible. Well, he says, don't ever do anything to anybody else that you don't want done to you. Okay, this is what you do to a woman. You excite her. She gets really excited, and she's going way ahead of you, and you go, well, I'm not really interested in that. I just wanted to have you hanging around. And that's in reality, that's what you're doing. And then you're dumping her. You don't like it. You don't do that to others. He says, you do unto others what you'd have them do to you. Okay, so if that's the case, if you're not supposed to get involved, then how do you get to know girls? Any questions?
I've got an NIV and it says it's good for a man
not to marry.
Then the footnote says, it's good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman.
Right. And that's one of the biggest complaints with the NIV, that they have a number of interpretations that aren't good. And why they put Mary in there, I don't know. If you look at the RSV, the NASB, it'll say not to touch. But the word in the Greek is the root word for excite. And I don't know why they put that in there, because I've read it also. It says it's good. It doesn't make sense, because if it says, it reads, it is good for a man not to marry, but since there's so much immorality, each man should have his own wife. Well, what do you mean? It's not good to marry, but each man should have his own wife? That's a contradiction right there within the same verse. So I don't know why they put the word marry. Whoever interpreted it did, but I just looked it up because that always bothered me. But the root word is, anybody else have another version here? It's not NIV?
New King James Study Bible hints towards marriage too.
It says marriage too?
Saying it's better to not marry. That's kind of what they're getting at, is it's better
to
not marry.
I don't think so. The word here is not to excite. You're not to excite the woman, not to touch her. And it means to touch her you're touched by this, whatever's happening. I know that's what it says. But it's the meaning here is don't do it. But it says it's good to marry. It's because you don't want to get involved sexually. If you get this interest, you get a burning for the woman, you better go marry her. That's the implication here. Okay, how do you then find the right woman? Well, this is what I like. I tell you, take a piece of paper. On one side, list all the qualities you want in a woman. What is this wonderful woman you want? And you list them all. You go down, you want her to be kind, sweet, loving, caring, nurturing, beautiful, everything you want. Then you draw a line, and on the other side, you write all the things that she would want in a man. If you want a beautiful woman, what'd she want? Well, she wants a handsome guy. Well, see if you qualify. If she wants a guy who's loving, kind, loyal, faithful, hardworking, gentle, sensitive, caring, considerate, okay, you take that side and spend your time developing yourself as a Christian those characteristics. You develop to be the right man at the right time. When you develop those characteristics and you're mature and you can handle it and make godly marriage, God will bring you nose to nose with her. You can trust God. You don't have to, zigzag through the forest and afraid that you zig and she zags and you missed her and that's it. God says He wants you to have the right woman. He wants you to have a godly marriage. All through her, He says, have godly marriage. Raise godly children. He encourages it. So He's not trying to hide this wonderful woman for you, but He doesn't want you to do it until you can honor God in your marriage. If you can't glorify God, then He doesn't want you married, because you'll be miserable and you'll be a bad witness and you'll ruin your own life. So wait till the right time. When you're ready, when you're mature, then fine. So spend your time developing how to be a godly person. If dating isn't good, then so you're working to develop yourself to maturity. How do you get to know sisters in the Lord? And there's lots of ways. Instead of going on dates, because see, on dates, you go to the movie. How much good conversation do you get when you go to a movie? You don't. You're not talking. You're going to listen to a movie. You don't learn about sisters. And what are the things you learn? It's better to learn about them when you're not on a guy-girl relationship date. It's better to know them as sisters. When I was about junior, senior in college, I started to go to Jim Wilson's Life Between the Sexes, and he's saying this, and I said, well, how are we supposed to get to know him? And he says, well, start taking some leadership. Be a leader. Why don't you organize activities that you can invite 20 girls and 20 guys to, and then it's not a date. And he said, go organize volleyball on Friday night, organize square dances. And then he said, if you really want to know the character of the woman, start organizing, we'll go clean up a mile of the road on Saturday morning. And you find out what sisters in the Lord are servants. Who's willing to give of their time to go do something that's a sacrifice? And then he said, well, go organize, take 10, 15 of them to go do hymn sings in the old folks' home on some night. And he says, you're going to find out what sisters have a heart for ministering and have a heart for serving. The girls that aren't willing to spend any time doing that, you find out where their hearts are at. And if you're willing to do it, that's good ministering. It'll build your character. So you start doing things like that. You find out who ministers. You find out what girls' hearts are, and you get to know them as sisters, not on a date, but interacting, you know, involved in ministry stuff. And there are lots of ways. And then you don't get involved beforehand. If you find a sister then who you really think is good, and you think she qualifies, and she has all those things, well, start praying about it. This is not a competition. You can take your male hunting license and tear it up and put it away so that you're not just seeking physical encounters, and trust God. If you can pray about it and start praying, and you should pray to the point where you say, this girl qualifies, and if I make an interest in her and she responds, am I willing to be serious? Am I willing to take responsibility of my actions? If she responds and goes, yes, I'm interested, are you willing to follow on the interest? If you're not, then don't go show any interest in her. She should not know you have any interest until you've seriously prayed about it for a long time. And you're ready to go, okay, I show interest, she responds, then I'm responsible. And it doesn't mean that, I'm not saying you've decided to marry her before you ask her out, although it can work. But I mean, you say, this is someone who is capable of being a wife that I would like. You know, so you limit your field. You're not out there playing around with everybody. You're not out seeking a girl. You know, if you have a girlfriend every other month or a new interest every other time you turn around, you're missing what God wants. You're not evaluating the sisters, and you're not treating them right either. Wait till God says you're ready. If not, you get into activities that aren't good.
I find it's kind of funny how some girls are accepting why the female is suddenly an accepting person. For instance, I came to Moscow, Idaho, and I wasn't going to school for about 6 months. I was working. I would see these girls for the most part they go to college, and they didn't know me, they wouldn't pay attention to me. All of a sudden, I've got classes now, and I'll have one class, one hour I'll spend in this class, and suddenly the same girls that weren't even looking in that direction suddenly become
if they're a godly woman, they're not going to be. If they're just a worldly woman, they're out with their own hunting license. Okay? They're trying to get a degree in MRS, period. You know, they're searching in the same sense, but they're not saying, what's the things that I want? Godly women, you don't find at bars, you don't find at parties. They're not out there searching at bars and parties. You find them in godly activities. And they're mature. If she's a mature, godly woman, she has nothing to do with you if you're not mature. She doesn't care what you look like or what you can do. She doesn't care whether you can jam a basketball or run 109 flat. That's not important. It means nothing to her if she's a godly woman. You bait your hook for what you want to catch. If you want to win the woman by how good you can play a sport, then once you get her, what's she impressed by? Pretty soon you can't play the sport anymore because you've gotten old and you can't jump anymore or run or whatever. Then does she dump you because you can't do it? You know, if why is she looking at you? If you're a godly man, she's looking for a man with godly qualities that never cease. And that's what she's going to be attracted to. And she will go after a guy who's godly. And if she's a godly woman, she can pick a guy out. She'll see real quick whether he's godly or not. You bait your hook for what you want to catch. If you become godly, then you will draw a godly woman. And she will be interested. And that's the price of being willing to wait. And then if you're a godly guy who's willing to wait, he also is more attractive because he doesn't have all this backlog of interest in a lot of other girls. He'll wait and be interested. About to finish, let me give you just a couple things that I think you need to think of when you're you are dating. If you have an interest and you start interacting with a girl and you take her out, how do you treat her? Well, number one, I think you got to always pray before you ever go out on a date. It's pretty hard to pray and ask God's blessing on your date and then go out and make out with God sitting there next to you after you pray. That doesn't work. It's not a good deal. You also think of, well, how should you treat her? Well, just think that this, somewhere out there is the woman you're going to marry. And some other guy's taking her out. How do you want that guy to treat her? Do you want him making out with your future wife? No, you don't. Well, treat this woman. You're taking some other guy's wife out, his future wife. Well, you better treat her in the same way and ask God to honor that. If you're taking a gal out and you don't know whether you're going to marry or not, you ask God to honor how you treat her to have your future wife treated the same way. Right? I don't think you should be going out hardly at all, but if you do, because you have a woman you think is a potential wife, and you're not sure, but you're still in that category, at that point, you better be saying, I better treat her like I want my future wife treated. If you keep that standard, you won't have any problems. You pray beforehand, and you treat her like you want your wife treated, and you're all right. Okay? You treat her like you want the other guy to treat your wife. Okay. That'll cover everything you do if the Lord's right there with you. Most guys don't like the idea. I say you're not supposed to be going out with girls. It only gets you in all kinds of problems. I've done enough counseling that I've had to counsel guys or girls that have things like herpes, various other sexual diseases. You go to marry a guy or a girl and they have to tell you that they have herpes, or you have to tell, you know, your future wife that you have herpes, and the only way you're ever going to have kids is for you to pass that to her, which is going to come through the process. That's painful. I know a number who just decide they won't get married because the only way they can do it is to infect their spouse with diseases that you can't ever heal. It's pretty scary. And you think you get involved with somebody and nowadays you can't tell. And this thing about condoms as though it were to protect you, if you study that scientifically, there's no way you're protected from it. It'll wipe you out. It's so deceptive what the world's throwing. It's feeding you worse than Alpo dog food and that line that's being presented. You don't get involved, and that's not something you ever want to tell a spouse, so you make sure that you don't ever get involved. It keeps you from ever having to share that with somebody that you love, that you were sleeping with somebody else and now you have some disease that you're going to give to them if they marry you. Think that through thoroughly. It'll keep you out of trouble.
Let's say you meet someone and you think you may want to get married. At what point do you make that choice, that discernment? Let's say you go out and you're sure enough, there's still any problems in the marriage, and you really want to get married.
Then you make the choice of when you're ready. Well, I think there's a number of things that you always should do. It says there's great wisdom in many counselors. You ought to be able to listen to the counsel of those around you. You should have some godly men around you can go to and say, I have an interest, and evaluate the interest, evaluate where she's at, evaluate how old you are, what your, financially, I don't think that's as much of a problem. There are people who have who could have financial problems where it is wrong. It's just if you choose to get married young, you know you're going to have to sacrifice a lot because you won't have the money to handle it. And financially, it creates great stress on a relationship. You know, they say that 90% of divorces occur with great financial pressure. And I think that's true. I don't think it causes that. I think it's a symptom of another cause. It's a, you know, it's a spiritual problem. They're not handling their money. But you need to go to people. One thing is, you're whoever the girl is you're going to marry, if her parents don't think it's right, you should never. You know, unless you can work through a point, depending on the age. If she's young, she's still under the guidance of her father. She should be submitted to her father. And there is a way that takes time to, I think, gain that allegiance to an in-law. It takes time. When I was getting married, I prayed for 9 months before I took my wife out, before I even showed her I had any interest. I knew where she had. She taught a Bible study in one of the dorms. I knew where she had all her classes. But she had no idea that I had any interest. And I prayed for 9 months before I took her out. Not in that sense. No, I didn't have to. But it was something where I prayed serious enough to say, before I'm going to show her an interest, I'm going to pray about it. When I did, I only took her out once before I told her that I had an interest and had prayed a lot. And I had prayed that she would have a peace about it. If she didn't, then I would disappear and assume that I was wrong. But if not, that she would pray about it. And when she did, she prayed about it, and we shortly decided to, but her parents did not. She had told her, actually, during that time I was praying, some guy had come up and asked her to marry her. She'd gone out with a couple times, and she made a vow before the Lord she wouldn't go out for 6 months. If I had tried to ask her out, she wouldn't have gone out with me anyway, which, you know, I knew later. And her mother and father knew that and felt that she hadn't gone out with anybody. Well, it was only about a week after that 6 months was up that I asked her out. And when I did, it didn't take long before we had decided to get married. Well, she's an only daughter, and her parents thought she hadn't been out with anybody. And he said, you know, this probably isn't a good idea that we break the news like this. So I took the next few months, her dad was building a house, and I went to, every Saturday, I went with her back to her house and worked with him working on his house. And slowly I built a relationship where, when I did ask him a couple months later, he said, I wonder why you're spending so much time down here. But he knew me by then, and he was willing to say, yeah, you know. And my wife was 20 at the time, and they very much wanted her to finish college, and I had just finished graduate school, and, you know, I was stable and had a job, but they wanted her to finish school, and they really didn't want her to get married before she got out of college. But under the circumstances, they were willing to. But it's only because I think I spent time to earn the right to do it, you know. And I think you can do that. You start spending it. If you do get serious about a girl, by the time you're serious, you should be talking about things like doctrines, biblical doctrines. From the time I got engaged, the 9 months till I got married, on every Monday, I would type up a sheet that had a biblical issue on it, like submission or headship or anything from speaking in tongues to every doctrine. And we'd get together and we'd exchange those. On Thursday, I'd give another one. So for 9 months, twice a week, we each wrote out a paragraph on a biblical doctrine. And by the time we got married, we had gone through reams of paper, but we knew exactly where we stood on all kinds of issues in the Bible. There was no question on any issue that we hadn't covered. And it builds a real background for, you know, having a stable marriage. I'm very thankful for that. Jim gave me a lot of good guidance that I was, God's grace, I'm very thankful for. I had somebody who taught me the right things to do in getting married.